Hi, and welcome to Prosody, WYEP's weekly show featuring the work of poets and writers. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest tonight is the poet C.M. Burroughs. C.M. Burroughs teaches writing at the University of Pittsburgh. She has recently completed her first manuscript of poems entitled Carbon Copy Incubator. Her work has been published in Pluck, Bat City Review, the Cave Canem 10x10 series, and Texas Poetry Journal. She has read her work at the Warhol Museum and the Studio Museum of Harlem, among other venues. She is a fellow of Cave Canem and Kalalu. Hi, CM. How you doing?
Hi. Thanks for having me.
It's great to have you. You're going to start with, I guess, poems from your manuscript, right?
Yes, yes.
Okay.
All right. This first poem is called Artist's Delight. But he draws back my clothes, covers me in a palette of skirts, and there is a blouse here. I am less touched. Finally. Goodness. He paints a field around me. My legs curl under. I am happy here. Great baskets at my sides fill with. This is a passion flower. This is a black-eyed Susan. This is a tired iris. This is a bloom of cotton. Bright as that sun and that moon. Happy here? My lips feather in grotesque smile. This land, this abyss. When he is unhappy with so many things, he stabs the forest behind me and these bowls in front. They do not turn away. They turn brighter. I've been writing quite a few poems that center around race and also children and just the vulnerable body. I'm thinking how bodies are in danger, so I have quite a few on children and childhood. Perishables. Sky's mouth said even the sun gets lost in this neighborhood. The sun is behind Mrs. Shaw's mass of blackened hydrangeas, caught in the throat of kudzu. But I fill the kiddie pool with cold water from the backyard spigot. The children need a body of water to lift them up in their green trunks and baby bikinis. I fill the pool despite today's edgy breath, despite the gospel cutting into my right ear. There's a drowning, a coming, a coming. There's a drowning, a coming. I fill the pool. I hear the neighbor's kids flying toward the sound, towels between their legs. Their sorcery will fill the plastic belly. Their magic will flow into the yard. Sky's mouth said even the sun gets cold in this neighborhood, but you know. Some I lift into the pool, unsteady toddlers. Others are large enough to overstep the rim. And when they splash the spigot water, when they wet the toddlers, when their ruckus voodoo shaves the grass, the sun hides deeper in the brush. Rays go underground like ostriches. There's a drowning, oh coming, oh coming. In this pool too small for loss, too small for a drowning. When I leave for the spigot, there's something in the water. There's voodoo on the grass. There are children goosebumped. A coming, screaming, a drowning, a drowning. Going to cemetery. Hard in the barrel. Liquid in the hunter's palm. In the temples of deer eating onion in the lowest section of the dell. A stone's saddle of holly. A cardinal. If the camera is a gun, girls in tiny nothing crash to the bedroom's bare rug. Cavassier splashes their made-to-pop powdered eyes. The girls are told to coo. No one screams, so the pines don't brace. The camera opens up and is not a camera. The director's first assistant is face down in the punch. He was telling girl number two, you look like a dove. A soft batch of feathers. Dung deep in fence post gorges, tendrilled in the fawn silk tail, a gravestone's quarry fissure, diamond of marrow, porcelain figurine. This, in language he thought romantic, as if full of dark sky, she turned on him and said, talk to the hand. Her hand was svelte, a ballet. The pines don't brace, so no one screams. Who escapes? The hot rapper with girl number one, his glass still intact, if not ringing. It was just like the club, he screams. His eyes are wet. His brother is back there. Back there. Her hand is an encore. The mountain is a mountain, a heap of bound bucks. But I'm saying, if something breaks out, you gotta dip, right? End glory. My hair, the beautiful rat pile, the glistening tail begins tearing away in my hands. I was only catching my hair as one would clasp a dog's velvet mane, but it came away pretty, scarf lengths in my hand. I was nowhere discreet. I was crowded, flashpan eyes and direct pointers, the norm rifted, a woman changing in public space, exhibitionist menstruation, a molting bird, awful. It's awful. Hair, flint, thin sheets of skin, small pots of blood in my hands, at my feet. To stay here or to run? Where to run? How fast? Which direction? Hell, home, or hospital? Bald? Will you lust after me? Will I be attractive underneath shower water where the point came at your feel of my saturated protein, my weave of weekly silt and silk sunning atop my spine? I'm sorry, I can't face myself, I can't look at you looking at me. My hair was licensed to lunge for masculine seats like I lunged for my friend in grade school, grating against each other like... Why am I telling this story? We felt stupid after the orgasms, empty, thoughtless. We studied up, snuck to sex sections, read that there were tools that could help us to be witty while doing it. We were doing it and had arsenals of sleek weapons intricate as both our daddy sheds. My scalp is still letting go. I am still attached to the floor. My feet electric fish tentacles attached to the muscle of pain. This platform of bottle slick blondes. Hot coils in my hands are bark brown. What is happening? Loss. Why? Don't you know? 7 mirrors, including the television screen, wiped glassy with cleaner. I have never been so ugly as I am right now. I am mourning right now. Will you hold me right now?
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest tonight is the poet C.M. Burroughs, reading from her manuscript of poems, Carbon Copy Incubator. I want to ask you about, you know, your project of writing about the vulnerable body. Can you talk about how you sort of arrived at that project? What happened?
Sure. It kind of came in several stages. It took place over maybe 2 years and involved 3 poets, Al Young, Toy Derricott, and Thomas Sayers Ellis. Al Young charged a group of us Black poets from Cave Con with writing political poems. Maybe 6 months later, Toy asked me if I was going to write about being Black and write about race. Maybe 6 months after that, Thomas asked me, told me once I had begun writing these poems about race, told me that it was an important thing, that not so many poets were doing it, and that we really had to get out there and start speaking for the people and for what's happening in actual life, not the existential poetry we kind of read and that include flowers and pretty things, but the grit of life and living. And it also for me involves, you know, I had a sister who died when I was 17. She was 12. So I speak about children from that perspective of knowing that children are in danger always and inevitably almost. And goodness, just being a Black woman, you know, and a woman, I feel in danger. And I look at it, men, women, everyone is in danger, in peril at some point and in some way in their lives, no matter what you've got, how you grew up, you know, outlet or none. We're all very vulnerable. And it's my work, I feel, to kind of portray that vulnerability and also the kind of capitalizing over that vulnerability to find what actual tools we can use against it. Mm-hmm. And my project, I feel, is to really write about that and capture that through poem and through the visual poem. Mm-hmm.
Well, how do you respond as an artist to someone, even I'm assuming these people are your teachers, even if someone is your teacher saying, you need to write about this, you need to do this, and then you sit down and do your work, does that mean you necessarily would do that? Or, I mean, a lot of writers I know see their work rising organically from the page.
Right. And
so how do you make sense of those forces?
Well, you know, I believe in it, in the organics of poetry. You know, all that is fine and well. But I think that these poets, particularly these people, Thomas, Owl, and Toy, asking these things out of me, you know, whether they felt it was a need or not, I discovered the need in myself to write through these things, if not just about them. You know, just living, coming to Pittsburgh from Atlanta, into a space in Atlanta where Black folks were all around me, you know, and that felt like a home and like family, to a space where, you know, things are a bit, can I say this, segregated. I think I was pushed into a space of needing to write these things. And so in that way, the need rose out of me. That's organic, right? That was a natural urge that possibly came sooner by me having the conversations with those poets that I did. Mm-hmm. Possibly came sooner, but I think it was there. It was there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And maybe they were, I don't know, maybe they were saying that also in response to some of your work.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Yeah. Definitely. I've sent to them, I've shown them really acrobatic poems, you know, that are, I suppose, a bit fierce in how they speak about whites, blacks, others, and also about gender, you know, the female body, its deconstruction and its striving for construction.
Okay, how about more poems?
Sure. This poem I actually wrote for Patricia Smith after something of hers that particularly moved me. It starts with an epigraph. My skin was translucent when I came out the womb. Suppose black blood could be seen. My skin thickened, but I never darkened up. Black, be gone. No knowing what places me in your kitchen, between the range and wall, to watch your mother skin you with disinfectant in one last heroic and sinful drive against your darkness. I appear in medias res when she's been scrubbing at you half an hour. When patches of skin pull away where her eyes make out bone to be passing the paper bag. I am aware of it all. Dark dust dashing for the baseboards, peppercorn hugging under the range's coils, but mostly your plum-colored dress with the pale daisies. Must be hundreds of those dazzling, smiling daisies contrasting against you. Under your mother's sharp elbow and arm, you bend toward the table. She needs leverage. Her moves are so blatant, she blurs, her color struck by loathing and speed. I'm in your kitchen, bright enough that you both say, son. You sit still, she says. You freeze. You lighten up, she says. You bare bone. Stay in from the sun, she says. You scab in the dark, browner than ordinary. Not quite black, but black enough. Black market takes the established system of commerce. Two wolves lay in the ball court at dawn, still hot from the tip-off, rebound, block. I see the youngin who thought he had it, so close he had it, but your hands, and with them your body, locomotive after locomotive, comes, and I am bound to the perpendiculars by my wrist and ankles, hair wild as an ostrich's back. Tell me, is my whole body worth your arriving to the station? Dame and kerchief, cowhide satchel, fool goodbye. I am not afraid, not tearful. Your freight rhythm on cauldron rails hits and dizzy scats on the sidelines while Louis sings, you go to my head. I am unwinding, color kin to coral and dissolving. Is the station full or emptied? Will you imagine the division or high lit, steel heavy? Push your hands into the coals. Call this and watch my body travel. This next poem might have been the first real gritty, you know, my heart is in this, my experience is in this kind of race poem that I wrote, because it was my first Pittsburgh experience of it, you know. So it's called Assumed Savage. I, flower moth in lush, lush, you hear? Yard. White, a quaint ant asks if you need something. I am black. I am reaching into my coat below coats for cash. This hello, how are you? Dialect is strange fruit. It is plum black, broke blood. Fine. I'm fine, and you? Without answer, without pause, do you need something? Punctuated, marked by visioning my hand in her man's, my friend's coat. My hand gripping his bills. I'm getting some cash, I say. For my boyfriend's coat? Look, my coat, my, is here. Look. Smile, oh, smile. Sorry, doesn't smile. Grimace. I'm sorry, it's just that my best friend's wallet was stolen last week, so, doesn't look. I'm just apologizing. Just. Adjective. 1. Right in law or ethics. 2. Fair-minded. Good in intention, impartial. I'm just, 4, in correct accordance with a standard look. All right, so this next poem is actually a small departure. It's called The Question Tossed at You, and it's based on a series of blanks. So I'll try to make those blanks apparent by the pauses I make. Number of partners in lifetime? Brings into question Clinton. Do I or don't I count? We, she and I weren't, but we're definitely. I imagined her, but couldn't count up when it counted. He and I sweet for minutes, hours, days. I, him, he, me, I think, one for sure. No aqua he's, no gilled she's, no evidence. I wash the panties, throw them out, no leftover, look how wet. I clean them after I come, although, and me, we laid in it, but then that was love. I'm saying, soon as he said, take off that red dress, I was naked golden, tender kisses, round and round and round we go. No, how you doing, little mama, let me whisper in your ear. But how amazing. Number of partners in lifetime? Right. Amazing.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest tonight is the poet C.M. Burroughs, reading her work. Okay, I want to ask you about, I guess, not exactly blanks, but spaces and drop-offs and restraint in your work. I like the feeling of what's left out in your work, what's not there, and it seems that, tell me if I'm wrong, that you point to that a lot, leaving off a line at the end of leaving off a word, or seems like whole lines.
I have a penchant for silence. I love that silence can fill a space so that the reader can insert their own language, their own dialect, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or even that a breath can happen,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, silence means a lot to me. I teach through it. I write through it. I think it's important to have that in a poem. It's mm-hmm. thought space for me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And yet, I mean, I think all poems deal with silence. I mean, mm-hmm. with white space, with line break. And yet, I feel like you handle it very differently. I mean, you...
Well, thank you.
you point us to it, and you... Well, having these... I mean, I'm looking at the page that mm-hmm. people can't see, but there are blank, you know, lines where words should be, you know. So it's very much a part of your work.
Mm-hmm.
Not sure what my question is.
Well, for me, I use blanks, I use parentheses, I use brackets, and sometimes the brackets have nothing in them but an exclamation point and implied language. But it's an innovation, it's discovery, and it's letting the reader have a chance to create part of the poem.
Mm-hmm.
And why not, right? Mm-hmm. Why not when poems are in part so prescribed mm-hmm. right now in some books you might pick up? Why not give the reader some liberty there? But,
yeah. Well, I feel like that's already there.
Mm-hmm,
I mean,
people mm-hmm.
need to take that and use it and inhabit the poem. But
right.
you're like opening the door more, or else, that's one way to look at it, or else forcing them to engage
yeah,
also.
Yeah.
So
sure, especially this last poem, you mm-hmm. know, forcing a language upon the poem that's not there yet when mm-hmm. you're inside of it.
Yeah. So it's almost like you're it's a challenge of sorts
sure,
to the
sure.
reader.
Yeah, I've been told that before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you make us do some work, which is good.
Mm.
But it leads to another question I have about, you know, the non-narrative feel of a lot of your work.
Mm-hmm.
That you seem to rely on sound and image.
Yes.
To deliver us to a sense of story. It feels like there is a sense of story.
There's always a story. There's always a story. What I, you know, and I've tried to come up with language for what it is that I feel I'm doing now. But if I could describe it, I'd say that I'm looking at the narrative in a very lyric way. So I'm taking scene and making it a very cinematic thing and finding the music through how I capture scene through the poems. So I've never wanted to write a straight, you know, linear narrative, but it's about the importance of the flashes of scene you can give a person so that they get the story in as little time as possible
mm-hmm.
and in as sharp an image as possible, one after the other.
Mm-hmm. So maybe a different kind of leaping?
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And yet, you know, as first-time listeners, we might plug in and plug out at times and let it roll over us and
mm-hmm.
and miss a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Which is
mm-hmm.
fine.
Yeah. I mean, you know, there's the page stage thing, and I think people have, when they might not gravitate toward the work, or rather understand the work right away on the page, once I read it, they seem to gain a different understanding of what's being said, of the poem.
Sure. Yeah.
Which is always interesting to me, but I think it has something to do with how the visual mind works and how the poem is working with the visual mind.
Mm-hmm. And says a lot about how hard people are willing to work with poetry, but I think it
sure.
should be very hard. But you know, but it's also compelling. There's that, you know, there's a lot of beauty in your imagery, and there's a seduction in your in the sound mm-hmm. that I think will pull people in and get them inside, so they're gonna roll around find their way through.
Nice.
But we have time for more poems.
Okay. This is one of the newer pieces. It begins with an epigraph by S. MacLeod. But evolution is a tricky thing. How to love these people who are, name them, and have called you nigger. 1. Of course, you are all burnt and broken. A reliable effect. 2. Fourth cup, honey. 3. Say you find redemption in the phrase, am not. 4. Half pound roasted unsalted almonds with skin. 5. Say you take this time for them. 6. 1 teaspoon cardamom seeds. 7. The good news, once a revolutionary, always a revolutionary. 8. 2 bananas sliced 1/4 inch thick. 9. Visualize NIGGER. Imagine it from anvil to ancillary helium balloon. 10. Raced balloon. 11. 1 quart skim milk. 12. You're not getting enough sleep? 13. In a food processor, grind the almonds and ancillary nigger to a coarse powder, transfer to a medium saucepan. Add the milk, honey, and cardamom. Warm over moderate heat. 14. Off the heat, cover and let stand for 20 minutes, then strain. Discard the solids. 15. In a medium nonstick skillet, warm the remaining 3 tablespoons honey. Add the bananas and cook over moderately high heat, stirring for 2 minutes. Scrape into bowl. Pour in the warm almond milk and serve with spoon. 16. Nigger will film on top, can be discarded or consumed. Actually, had a poem requested of me, so I'll read. The Rest Abridged. Half came for a whole weekend. Half met half at the door. Half dropped his bags. He became one-third. One-third kissed half hard on the lip, grabbed half's whole hand. They were 5/6. They were near perfect. I feel full when I'm with you, he said. Half grabbed his bags as half led the way to her apartment, where there was one bed, and most nights half thought, where is the rest? There must be more. Gazing one-eyed at her one arm, one leg, and half skin, you could see half of reproduction from the right angle. Half and half went for dinner, and together finished a whole dish. Back home, they split the 10-minute shower limit. Water was rationed that summer. These halves kept clean and close, and copulation was the careful part. Always side to side. Here is the miracle. Their nostrils bridged, the chest cavity closed, their pelvis bound like the tangled horns of rams. Once, I wrote a poem larger than any man, even Jesus. So tall the furrow of hair couldn't be tousled, feet large as lakes. I titled it Personification, so it would live. Godzilla, in parentheses, so it would kill. There was blood. Testicles lay in the streets like confetti post-parade. I was glad. Diana, after Actaeon's own salivating pack, consumed him. Limb by limb licked, tendons trailing. I rode the shoulder of my poem, wanting to see their faces, none specific, all malevolent, calling out last moments in ridiculous language. Love, affection, tender, one screamed, not loudly enough and too late. I wore red paint, salvaging neither plated breast nor firm mouth. Not once was I tender. I wanted them wasted. Him, 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 him.
The poetry of C.M. Burroughs. We're out of time. Thank you so much.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
It's great. You've been listening to Prosody, WYEP's weekly show featuring the work of poets and writers. Writers appearing on Prosody also have their work showcased in Chapter and Verse, a biweekly feature in Pittsburgh City Paper, the Arts Entertainment News Weekly, published every Wednesday. Prosody is produced by Jan Beatty and Alan Wadey. Sound engineers are Lauren Wolf and Joseph Wilk. Please tune in every Tuesday night at 7 for Prosody, independent public radio, 91.3 WYEP.